Welcome to Dating Games, the Modern Relationships Podcast. I'm your host, Bobby Temps, and our guest this week is a comedian and fellow podcaster as host of The Shift, where each week they chat sex, dating and relationships, including cultural differences in dating, which our guest has so much insight on having moved to New York from Ireland over 7 years ago. Please welcome to your ears, Katie Boyle.
Hello, thank you for having me.
It's great to chat to you. I was saying to you off air, something that I continually want to explore with guests is cultural differences as a factor in dating, that I think it can be easier to articulate at times what that means within a country of dating people from different backgrounds, but then actually dating in multiple places can be kind of difficult to compare. I think partly because perhaps, you know, within context, it makes sense in both places.
Yeah, absolutely. I would find being in America the past 7 years has definitely been loads of cultural differences. Just that I didn't... Well, firstly, when I first came over here, I didn't really know about situationships. And I think I know that back home in Ireland that people aren't maybe getting in relationships as quickly as they were 7 years ago when I was there. And I was from like a small town. So if you were just dating, you were just kind of automatically together. But here, what's bizarre about it is people will actually date. So you'll meet up 3, 4, 5 times, like go to the cinema, go out for drinks, meet the friends, meet the family. But like, if you don't have like a written contract that you're in a committed relationship, it's like they're allowed to do anything. So I always just thought like you'd just be together if you're spending that much time together. And then you could find out like 6 months later, no, they have like, I don't even know if they have the time and the energy to have like multiple. So I've gotten very like, I've had to be very non-chill, like very vocal. I was dating a guy who I asked him if he was dating anybody and he said no. And he was also like a fellow comedian. So it's not like I wasn't going to find out, but like turned out he had a girlfriend. And like we had been dating, he had asked me not to use condoms. And I was like, oh, well, I don't like to... if the person's with someone else and then they were like, if they're having sex with someone else. And he was like, what do you think? I'm out here like, you know, banging loads of people. And I was like, oh, so in my head that meant like, okay, which now I know I have to be like, well, are you? So then I found out he had a girlfriend and he was like, oh, we're like in an open relationship, which isn't true because he would have just said that at the start. Or if it is true, he knew that I wouldn't have gotten involved with that. And I was like, yeah, but still, like, are you having unprotected sex with her? And he was like, yeah. And I was like, so she's having unprotected sex with other people in this theory of open relationship. So you have to be very careful here. Like, my experiences has been, yeah, you nearly need to give them like a questionnaire before.
Wow. I guess I hadn't really thought about that. Definitely situationships is something that I've come across. I've definitely been in, but I think at times that's been that I have a certain comfortability with maybe vagueness that I've sort of let things get into places where I don't really know where they are. But certainly what you described of like, if you're seeing somebody multiple times a week, if you're meeting friends, I mean, I think I would just be like, so what do I say to your friends? Who am I to you? I think that kind of stuff would really be a line where I'd be like, oh, I think I'd want to already know who I was by then.
Yeah, and you're investing time. Like, I have a bit about it, but like how I was seeing this guy for a few months and we were seeing each other. It was during the pandemic, so we were spending a lot of time together. But yeah, when I brought up like the relationship stuff, he was just like, no, I don't want a relationship. But I was like, but what do you think this is? You know, it's like I'm not doing work experience. You know, I'm like, I'm investing time and it just is very stressful because I think you need to keep they need to keep like a line, like don't be taking my time. But anyway, the lesson I learned was just to be very clear from the start what I'm looking for. And then if they're not interested in that. But the problem is that a lot of time I would say like there's a term here, like that people throw around like fuck boys. And then people say, oh, that's like a slutty boy. And a slutty boy is great. A slutty boy will be slutty, like good for him. A fuckboy to me is a guy who fucks with your emotions. Mm-hmm. So I'll have all these guys who will tell me like, I've never met anyone like you and I enjoy spending so much time with you. And they text me all day and they use me like a therapist. But then when you bring up the relationship talk, and I always would wait like 3 months because I want to like not be too intense. And they're like, what? No, I wouldn't. I don't want a relationship. And I'm like, what the fuck has been going on?
That's, Jesus. Yeah. That's so scary to me as well, because then it gets you rethinking everything. Like, let's say you're then you've met all the friends, you're thinking, is it like, were they a jury, like in trying to decide whether I'm being kept? But I think that's part of the importance.
I don't even think they're a jury. I think it's more that they, to these certain guys, and I probably was attracted to like narcissists for a really long time, and maybe not narcissists. There's a lot of narcissists in New York, and I know I'm generalizing, but like that's just what it brings here. You know, and I hope I'm not one. I feel like pretty modest. Like people are like, well, you're a comedian. And I'm like, yeah, but that just makes me less of a narcissist. Doing comedy makes you realize that you're not the main character, I feel. But, you know, I feel like some of these other things, like I've dated DJs or like bartenders who are really actors, but aren't really doing anything to be actors, you know. And so they're just a bit like, they have all the like Kanye belief, but without actually trying to do anything, if that makes sense. I just watched the Kanye documentary, so that was probably like a reference for anybody who's only watched the Kanye. But yeah, so I think for them, it was more like, oh, look at this girl I have on my arm. You're more like a tool, or you're their jewelry. I thought you said jewelry originally, but you said jewelry. But like, it doesn't, they're never planning to commit because they believe in their head that they're going to make it big one day. And they don't want to commit to anybody because they want to be able to keep their options open, you know? And when they get, because then when they're massive, they'll be able to get all their models, like, and it's like, oh, you're up. They all think they're going to be the next Pete Davidson or the next, like, big DJ, you know? And you're like, okay, get out here.
Pete Davidson confuses me so much. I think he's an example of how far you can get as a funny man. And that is the most polite way I can say that. Yeah. It's wild. And when you started describing this stuff, I sort of wasn't, I'll be honest, I wasn't 100% on board, because I'm thinking, okay, I know a lot of really cool Americans, and I know that in many ways, New York is an epicenter of certain extreme traits. It's an extreme city. And the more you've described it, the more things are coming together. And I'm like, I think I do know people that fit a bit more of this than either me or them would maybe want to admit.
Yeah, and like I totally get it. It is it can be hard to be like, well, if you're in a city where no one really grows old and you really think you're going to make it, and then to be like, there's so much option and choice, you know, like when you order food at a diner, you're like, oh, but maybe I should have gotten the pasta. So it's kind of like, I do have like a bit of sympathy towards it where it is hard. And you can just, why commit to somebody when you could meet someone else amazing the next week and then someone else amazing the next week and just have loads of sex and no responsibility. But for me, like, I've always wanted to like have a partner, and I'm in like a really healthy relationship now. And I could, that poor man, but I was so broken by the time I met him. I was like the first date, I was like, I'm looking for a relationship. I'm no bullshit here. And he was like, yeah, yeah, me too. And I was like, all right. And that was it. And we've been together 10 months. So it's really worked out. But, and I love having like a partner, and the thought of having sex with anybody else, like, just, but that's the thing. Not everybody's like that. Other people are like, I love having different partner and novelty. Mm-hmm. I hate the thought of someone touching me that I don't know. So yeah, so it really depends on personality. My personality doesn't necessarily fit in New York. If you're like, I want to go to like sex clubs and I want to like try my like wildest kink, like, here's the place to do it, because there's no shame in, you can really, I went to a sex club. I didn't do it anything. I just went because I was curious and I wanted to report about it on the podcast. But honestly, it wasn't that weird. Like, I honestly thought I'd be really judgmental, but I actually was like pretty normal, and the people were just having fun and they're into it. And when you're like in a place where everybody's into something, you're like, oh, okay, that's cool. I could see why you would do it.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's, it can be like strangely normalizing, I guess, that you're like, oh, well, I guess this is the vibe that I'm a guest to. And yeah, of course it's going to feel normal because I'm the newbie here.
Yeah, yeah. No, I was there and they were all like, it was very comfortable and respectful because it was like a high-end one that women get in for free, but the men have to pay $2,000, which is like crazy. But it was a lot of like couples. Yeah, but then there was like a sex show, and like afterwards I was like, wow, that was just so normal. It didn't seem like weird. And while I was watching it, I was like, oh, I hope like that guy like goes down on her. Like, that's not something I ever thought that I would be like, oh, you know, excited to watch.
I love this idea of you walking into this totally new environment, and then shortly after, you're there on the sidelines, like rooting for things. You got that invested.
Yeah, yeah. I was nearly heckling the male performer.
I love that. And what was the other thing I was going to say? No, the last thing I'll say about kind of what you shared a little bit about dating in New York is I can see like the trap from multiple angles as well, because I can see also how you could be meeting these guys that maybe have a lot of that kind of actor / bartender confidence that you need to have a certain amount of that confidence to think that you can survive in New York and all your dreams come true. You know, part of that can be very alluring, and then they're spending all this time with you and all the signs seem to be there. And so, of course, you're going to turn around a few months in and be like, hold on, you just introduced me as a friend.
Mortifying.
What have we been doing here? And, you know, you can kind of get wrapped up in that, and instead, like, the putting in the boundaries and the checking what is going on can seem like a threat to the potentially like really organic way things might have grown. If, you know, if they're a serial dater that knows what they're doing, you can be like, I've just been swept up and I don't want to rock the boat.
Yeah, there's a lot of love bombing for sure. And that's where I would again go back to a fuckboy as someone who emotionally fucks you, because they give you a ton of attention, a ton of like compliments, and then it doesn't really mean anything. But I would say the best advice I ever got, and when I met my partner, I'm so American. When I met my boyfriend, the thing was, it was the first time I was ever multiple dating. And I think a therapist was on my podcast and he said, like, it's really important never to be just dating one person until they are like, this is a relationship. Because he said, like, a lot of time women wait to be chosen and they should be doing the choosing. And it definitely puts out a better energy. Like, when I met my boyfriend, I wasn't having sex with any of the guys, because I'm just like, I've had like a lot of sex. I'm like an accidental slut, because I've dated so many guys. I've dated like 4 guys a year, because I just go from 3 months to 3 months. But I like to wait like a few dates to get to know them. But I was like, this time I was like, do you know what? I'm going to date multiple people, not have sex, and just like see and have fun and just like go on dates and stuff. And so there was 3 guys I was like going on dates with when I met my boyfriend. But like when I met my boyfriend straight away, I knew he was looking for a relationship. So I kind of just cut them out. But I would think I was like on a good, like, I don't know what the word is, but like when you don't want it, it kind of comes, which is so cliche. But I think when you're dating multiple people, you're not focusing on one person who isn't even your person, you know?
It's something that I do try and work out, because of course, as a single person, that's a lot of what you hear of, you know, you've got to make sure that you're out there, but also it'll come when you're not looking. And I'm like, what does that mean?
I know.
What is this?
I know, because I was like, people would say that to me and I was like, well, I'll always be looking because that's what I want. But I think for me, what was good is I was investing so much time in one person and then fantasizing when they never wanted the same thing. So at least when I was going on dates with a few different guys and talking to them, it stopped me from getting attached to one and being deluded. I was deluded. I was like fantasizing things that weren't real. So then like when I finally met my boyfriend, out of all 4 of them, I was like, oh, I like this guy. He wants the same thing. So I could put my focus. And like pretty quickly, he asked me to be exclusive. So it was like, oh, he's putting his money where his mouth is. And when he asked me to be exclusive and I said yes, he was like, to me, that's kind of the same as a relationship. Like, would you be okay with us just like being in a relationship? And I was like, yeah, sure. So that was the first time a guy had kind of like done that in a while. So I was like, okay, yeah, we're going the same direction. But I do think if you're just talking to one person the whole time for a few months, they haven't asked you to be exclusive, you're kind of putting all your energy and eggs in one basket. So, yeah.
Yeah, no, I think that's true. There's a strange kind of neutralness that can come from having multiple options, that you can find yourself like not being swayed too much in one way or other. And perhaps you'd got into that kind of rhythm with dating. And it's interesting because in a way it sounds like part of what you're describing of like the New York dating scene and there being so many options and people weighing it up and knowing that there could always be another person around the corner. And so you almost had to get into that, but that was actually the right way for you as well. And then you find someone that actually does want what you like. And maybe if he'd been your only option, other things might have come up. Maybe you would have sort of found yourself over investing even at that point, because you
weren't. I don't even know if I would have, because if I'm like honest, my boyfriend isn't like my type at all. He's not someone I would have ever saw myself dating. So I don't know if I would have even looked at him, but I was like doing a very like eyes open, date different types of people, because I had dated like a lot of like, I was really attracted to like more like abusive. I didn't realize, but like definitely like crazy or guys who needed to be fixed, you know. Ugh, I'm such a cliche. So I was trying to get out of that. So I was trying to meet people from different walks of life. So, and like purposely trying to date different people so I wouldn't get attached to one. So I genuinely don't think I would have ever asked him out. Like I slipped into his DMs. So yeah, there was something else I was going to say there when you were saying about the dating here too. Oh, it's after slipping my mind, but it'll probably come back to me.
Cool. All right. Well, maybe this is a good time for you to share your dating story before we get further.
The dating story, I haven't told this to anybody in years. This is like when I first moved here. And like, I've always been like a hopeless romantic as well. So there's a bit, a lot of it's my fault, really, to be honest, like all the rom-coms and Disney. But I met this guy at my bar and he put his phone number on my receipt. And like, that's so like rom-com American, and that hadn't happened to me before. Yeah. So I was like, oh my God. And he was just so beautiful as well. He looked like Clark Kent, which I used to love to watch when I was younger. So I was like really excited. And he came at the end of a show and we were hanging out at the bar, but it was like in the back room where the show was. So we were the only two people. And he just, straight away, he just started talking about how Christian he is and how people need to know more that Jesus is real and that the moon aligns to show that Jesus is real. Honestly, it was like, and then how he has like no friends and no, and how he overthinks everything. And I mean, I didn't speak this whole time. It was just like word vomit of definitely someone who was probably going through, I don't know, a lot of Jesus stuff. And then he started to say, and I was kind of, it was ironic as well, because he's talking all about this Jesus stuff. And I think he thought, because I wear a cross, and obviously that's another thing as well. A lot of people have seen me wear the cross, hear the accent and presume I'm really religious. So I've gotten a bit of like extra religious people ask me out and then be like, oops, sorry, no, just a gift from a parent and, you know, just a culturally Catholic.
See, this is what was confusing me even about his approach, because I'm like, of all the people, you've met an Irish woman, you don't need to convince you of religion's significance, if we say it in that broad way.
Yeah, it was, but it was so weird because I never asked about it. It was like, it was, if I'm honest, it was like it was the first time maybe since he moved to New York he had someone listen. So my how are you turned into his like fucking religious dump and how people don't care enough about religion. And maybe he genuinely thought that I'd be like, yes, hype, but I'm, you know, I'm honestly, I believe it all and I don't believe any of it. If you're to tell me whatever aliens made us, I'd be like, grant, you know, I just, who am I to say anything's wrong or anything's right? And I think religion is beautiful if you use it for the right ways. And I think, you know, people ruin it. People ruin religion, you know, and people are terrible. But he wasn't looking at me the whole time. And it was definitely like a rant. And then he said, started to go on about how he doesn't believe in sex before marriage. And I was like, oh, right. Okay. Well, then why am I here? Because like, I'm not going to marry him, you know? And I started to try and, because I was younger and an idiot. And I started to try and like, I had just gotten over a lot of shame with sex and stuff, especially coming to New York. So I started to try and like convince him about like how great sex can be. And I was like, honestly, it's not just like something dirty. It can be like how you find out you're in love with someone. And he was like, that's not true. I love my family. And then I was just trying to be silly. And I was like, yeah, like, I hope you're not fucking your family. And then he did not find that funny at all. He was not impressed. And then I don't know why, but I was like, got on the topic of masturbation, like what, like most people would have left, but he was like, I don't do that, that's like disgusting.
I love that you're straddling the line of being a really good and I'm sure supportive listener, which is probably was part of him feeling safe saying these things, but then also being like, but I'm a good listener with some thoughts in return. You were like, this is not going to be one way, I'm going to throw things back at you.
The worst part about it, we're talking about it all, it's Brooklyn. So Brooklyn, all the bars are like random chairs. We just happen to be sitting on a pew, like a church chair. And the way the pew is set up, I'm like the table. And then it's like, you know, it's like the pew. So it's like a high. So I can't like get out to my left. Yeah. So I'm kind of trapped. Like the only way out would be to crawl over the bloody table. So, and I'm like texting my friend the whole time being like, this is, I don't think this is 100% safe. So like, this is where I am and like, blah, blah, blah. And they were like, come into the city to us, come into the city. And so we got talking about the masturbation stuff. And he's like, no, it's disgusting. And I was like, well, you know, maybe that would help. Like, maybe you're feeling a bit sexually frustrated. And, you know, and then he was like, I just want to like meet someone. And oh, I know what it was. He said, oh, I completely forgot. He said sex should only be done for reproduction. And then I was just trying to be witty. And I was like, I think that's the last reason it should be done. Mm-hmm. And then he, again, did not laugh. And I was like, well, and I do think, like, that's ridiculous. Sex should only be done for reproduction. But also, this is a first date. So I was like, okay, so I'm just here because I'm a potential baby maker for you in the future. Like, that's insane. So I was like, all right. I was like, I actually have to go. Not planning to make any babies anytime soon. So I was leaving, and then he like kind of followed me, and I was trying to like walk fast, but he's like following me the whole time, like a little bit behind and still talking as if I'm there. Now I'm like maybe 4 feet ahead, and I'm wearing like high boots as well, which I never wear. So I'm not like, I'm like, okay, great. I always wear runners or sneakers, as Americans say. And I was like, fuck, I didn't wear shoes to run away in. But he, one stage when we're walking, he was like, Katie, I just want to go to heaven one day. And then I said, which again, younger.
This, so you is like, pushed him in front of a bus.
Yeah, right. I'm like, here you go. Here's your quick passage. But I, because I'm very like, I had an icky childhood, I would say. It was fine, but it was also icky. I don't talk to my mother. And so I really like try to enjoy my life as much as possible. It was very like stressful for the first 18 years, very like eggshells, very like arguments or CIA sort of torture styles, you know. And I saw a lot of shit happen to my dad and stuff. So I, ever since I left, I've like worked really hard on being like, let's like enjoy this as much as possible. Cause also when you're dead, you might be just dead, you know, we don't know. So I try to like, so what I said back to him, I was like, look, this might be heaven. And like, it meant like, is like an enjoy it type of thing. And he looked at me, he was like, this is not heaven. And I was like, oh fuck. And then we're like walking into the subway as he said that. And then we're in the subway and I'm like sitting in the very middle because I didn't want him to throw, like push me in front of a train. And then I got on my train, he got on with me, and I was like, oh, for fuck's sake. And then again, he's just talking about like Christianity or something and just like rambling. And then my phone beeped and he goes, is that your boyfriend? And I was like, no, I'm single. It's my friend. I have to go meet her. And then he was like, oh, can I come? And I was like, no. He was like, why? And I was like, this is not going well. And then I went to get off the train, but I know that because he lived up by where I was working. So it wasn't a stop. And he went to get off and I was like, no. And he was like, what? And I was like, you stay on this train. This is not your stop. I'm done with this. And then the doors closed and then I just left. And then he texted me at one point saying, you're in my prayers. And I was like, oh, I'm in my grandmother's prayers. I don't need to be in anybody else's prayers. But I just like wrote back and was like, look, this is actually quite terrifying, so you need to just like leave me alone. And then he was like, okay, I'm sorry. So then that was it. Never heard from again. And I mean, that was like literally 5-6 years ago. It was me like fresh off the boat, maybe. So maybe like 6 years ago.
Welcome to New York, eh?
Wild. I haven't like thought about that story in a long time, but yeah. And he was so handsome, such a pity. I hope he gets his brain fixed, because
what a wild story. And I mean, valiant efforts on your part to try and like lighten the conversation, deal with him in, yeah, what is a scary situation, like really creepy, really strange. Yeah. You're literally stuck in a pew with him.
Yeah, I know. It does. Sometimes I'm like, am I real? Because this is a bit ridiculous, you know? But I will say, for women, I think we're always playing the line. And like, you know, the statistics, women are always dying by a male who's like in a close circle to them. And I think,
yeah.
So I think as women, you're just odd. And my father is a superintendent in Ireland. And he does tell me like when I was small about all these women who went missing and stuff. And I'm like, so I'm just like always like a little nervous. So I think for me in that situation was, okay, like, how do I get out of this as nicely, as politely, but also so that he won't stalk me and murder me? And you're always trying to think that, like, you have to always, and that's the problem. So it's kind of frustrating the way, like, it's made men and women be, like, made differently, because women are just made to be more strategic. Like, I think in a situation like that, if it was, like, a guy and he was talking the ear off him, he'd be like, fuck off, don't talk to me. Mm-hmm. Whereas you can't do that as a woman, because then their ego will take a hit so hard. So you have to be really like, oh no, I gotta go. Thank you so much. And sometimes I just want to be like, fuck off. Like, you know, but you just can't, because you're literally risking your life. I started therapy over here because, you know, I'm assimilating. But it's actually really nice. But my therapist is always giving out to me because I don't use my voice. But I'm like, I don't think it's safe to use your voice sometimes. I think it's safe just to be like, okay, cool. Okay, bye. Like, just get out of the situation.
Yeah. And it's so fucked that it's that way, because so much of it is socialization. So much of it is like the moral compass for everyone's behavior, including that of men's, being put on women. And so you're expected to kind of like tiptoe around and make sure that the men are comfortable when they're, you know, in situations like this, they're the aggressor. They're the ones that need to check their behavior. And
even when you're breaking up with a guy, or just saying, like, I've had guys over here that, when guys will ghost you and they're not interested, and that's like, whatever, I don't care. If I'm not like seeing them that long, I mean, it just proves to me that they're not like even able to communicate that they're not interested. And so it's not that big of a, I didn't find it too hurtful. But I've had guys that there was one guy after 4 dates, I just wasn't interested. And he just kept being like, I don't understand. So you'd like really like, and I was trying to like mind his ego, but he just kept doubling down on it. But like, you know, like, and I'm like, oh, you're a great guy, it's just not for me. And he's like, but if I'm a great guy, why won't you date me? And then I had to eventually be like, I text him at one stage and I was like, I am going to block you and stop it, or I will tell you the truth and it will hurt your feelings. So he's like, fuck off.
But then
no, you have a weird penis.
But then you're painted as a bitch. And so, you know, that's you. You know, then
oh my God, actually, before anybody messages me for dick shaming, I'm just like, I'm not, women will put up with like weird, not great, maybe not working. We're very understanding with stuff like that. So don't message me now, because like, I think women will push past more physical and really try to learn the personality. So then if we're like not also interested in that, it's like, okay, just leave us be. We've tried our best, you know. Does that make sense?
Yeah, because that's the idea, is the trump card is like, oh well, your perspective is invalidated because you're just being a bitch. And then they get to go on and subject a different woman to their bullshit and hope that she puts up with it long enough that she gets emotionally or legally trapped.
And I think like if you're physically not attracted, or like your body parts don't match up or whatever, for men it's so much easier to be like, oh, you know, they objectify women. And this is again a generalization, but in a different way. But if a woman has to be very like, oh, you know, I'm not in this place right now. Instead of just being like, yeah, I'm actually just not attracted to you, or I just didn't find the sexual chemistry. And I mean, there's some nice guys who'll be okay with that, but you're just risking that there's some guys who just take it such an ego hit to it.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
It's strange, and you've reminded me of like how much this stuff can be transparent when looked at from different angles. So for me, dating people of all genders, the ways that guys will act towards women are very different to how they'll act towards me. So like, I have not been subjected to really hardly any love bombing from men, and I think a big part of that is like the masculinity thing of this narrow idea of how we're meant to be, and that you can potentially let your guard down and let your emotion show in front of like your mum and your girlfriend. Like, that's who we're raised, that they're the two safe women, that's all you get. Push down your emotions for everyone else, save it for them, it's their problem, you know. And then so like if they are then trying to date a guy, I'm not getting the emotional offloading in the same way. I'm not getting a lot of the toxic sides of like the love bombing and the, you know, the manipulation attempts, because they don't want to be vulnerable in that way towards a guy. Which, does that make
sense?
It's so strange.
Yeah, and it makes sense.
Like, I get it, but it's so weird to see you know?
It's like both sides are bad. They're not being vulnerable at all on your side, but they're using it as a weapon on the other side. And I don't even think they realize maybe, but they're like emotionally vomiting all of their fears, their traumas, but then saying they don't want a relationship. Like, what? I'm not. Don't tell me like what happened to you when you were 5. Have me listen and hold your hand. And that happens like first date over here. Like first date, they will tell you. And I think they think that that's a way that's like attractive to women or something. Maybe. I don't know.
Yeah. Being vulnerable, getting you invested. Here's my trauma. Come
invested
help.
For nothing. Yeah. And it's hard because you just get a bit old for it too. Like I'd heard so many traumas that like I was just getting like I just don't care anymore, you know. And a lot of the time it wasn't even that bad, and not to invalidate anybody's experience, but you know, you'd be like, oh, just get on with it at this stage, or go to a therapist. Or, you know, my partner now is the first partner who didn't share any traumas at all, and I'm sure he has stuff, or stuff will come out, but I mean, he's really healthy and would never emotionally dumped anything on me. And at the start I struggled with that because I was so used to this kind of trauma bonding. But then, you know, I kind of stuck it out and I was like, oh, this is just healthy. Oh, this is great. We just talk about normal things. This is lovely.
Yeah. Yeah. It's so refreshing. That's when you realize how far down the rabbit hole you've got, when you're like, oh, this actually seems to be a healthy dynamic. How refreshing.
Yeah. It's so I actually think I picked the one guy here, and I'm sure there is other guys, and I definitely was just like attracted to the wrong guy, but like has no ego, no like dick penis issue. Like I've had like a guy, am I allowed to be like dirty on this podcast?
Yeah.
That guy who kept being like, why won't you date me? Why won't you date me? And I genuinely did try to see if his personality would match up. And I even told him like, tell me, this is after like having bad sex. And he seemed sweet. So I was like, tell me something about yourself via text message before I decided to end it. And he was like, well, my favorite color is blue. And I was like, fuck this. This is like, we're not emotionally vibing, and we weren't sexually vibing. And the sexual thing was like, he didn't have, like he had like a small skinny penis, which is like totally fine. I don't give a shite, but he was deluded with it. You know, he didn't know. So he didn't like bring any condoms that were his size. He just brought one, or he didn't bring one. He asked me for one, and he didn't do any legwork. He didn't do any foreplay, which my boyfriend now is a comedian and he's very openly talks about it. he's like 6 foot tall, but he's like, you know, he's said on my podcast like it doesn't like match the 6-footness, but like, so he's like, it's actually just average. But I think guys who have average think that's small sometimes. But he's like very like giving like foreplay, or you know, going down, making sure I'm completely pleasured. But this guy had a very small skinny and didn't do any foreplay, and then asked me for a condom. But I was like, I don't think it's going to fit, you know, because this was like, you should really bring your own. and then he just tried to use the one I had, and but just straight away it slipped off and like got lost inside of me. And he was like, oh, it slipped off. And I was like, of course it fucking slipped off. Like, you know, I don't go around wearing skirts two sizes too big. Yeah. Like I'm aware. It's just like, be aware. And it's totally, and girls are so understanding with that stuff. And then he like pulled out his phone, I guess that was on the bed the whole time, and like shined a torchlight on my vagina to like look for the condom. Oh, it was
mortifying.
The most horrific experience of my life. And then he was so deluded that after, and in fairness to him, he did get it out because I was having a mild panic attack, and then he just put it in the bin. And then he asked me, like he curled up beside me, and I swear to God, he said, are you satisfied? But I thought it was like a joke because I was like, that is, and he just was like, he never laughed. He never,
was this what you were aiming for? We were going to lose a condom inside me?
Yeah, like trauma. Oh, you mean like my trauma right now?
That was the plan.
So when he kept texting, being like, tell me the real reason, like what's going on? And we'd only had 4 dates. I was like, oh, please don't make me tell you that also the sex was terrible. But I didn't, obviously, because I was like, it'll come and like burn my house down. But it was just like, yeah, it's nice to be dating someone now who has like no ego, anything like that. And no, he's not like narcissist or whatever. He's just very like down to earth. And I asked him out and he was like, oh, I had a crush on you a few years ago. And I was like, a few years ago? When did you ask me out? And he was like, oh, I you're like way out of my league. And I'm like, I like that level of delusion on his end, because that's a good delusion. I'm not out of his league.
I guess maybe. I forgot to say, off air, I give you points, and I think you need some points right there. A sound effect will be edited in afterwards. And I think that's what it comes down to for me, is don't make the delusion the other person's problem. You know, that you, like, when it comes to sex, you show up with whatever skills and assets you have, but do not then put that on the other person if things don't go the way you want, or if you have insecurities you've not worked through. Because that, I think that's the main, you know, it isn't really about size or whatever other metric. It's about, it's such a cliche, but it's about what you're doing with it. And so certain things that will take me right out of it, like if you're struggling to get there, or if you're struggling to get it up, and then you just won't let it go. If we've been trying for half an hour, I'm ready to go to sleep. We can just cuddle. We can talk. Yeah. We can watch. Yeah, I'm out of it. I'm not judging you. I have just lost interest. And I think that, you know, at a certain point, we're going to make it worse, or we're going to create trauma of you keep trying and it not getting there. Do you know what I mean? I think at a certain point, it's counterproductive. And yet some people can have a level of insecurity where that then feels really abrasive. And I have had it where, I mean, one guy in particular tried to then turn that around on me and got really aggressive with me. And whilst I didn't feel like under any threat for my safety or anything, I did kick him out, because I was like, no, there's a hard boundary here. You're not going to get aggressive with me because you're feeling insecure. That's not happening. This is I don't even know you that long. Get out.
Yeah, no, you're dead right. That's like inspiring to hear, because I think a lot of the time people wouldn't do that. They'd be like, oh my God, I'm so sorry. You know, like, and they play into people's insecurities, but you have to realize that's someone else's issue. Mm-hmm. And all men struggle, like, you know, it's like women
struggle. There's something, you know, there's body insecurity of some kind. There's something that happens. You know, we all get older. That's a factor.
And you just have to communicate it. Like, so I know with my boyfriend, when we first started dating, sometimes he would like find it hard to like come or whatever. And I'd be like, oh, if you just want to like masturbate after like sex or whatever. And he was like, yeah. And then he doesn't struggle with it at all. But he said with a previous partner, they made such a big deal about the fact that he wouldn't come during sex that it put a lot of pressure on him. Mm-hmm. And it was like never about that partner, but the partner thought it was. So they took it as like an offense to them. Whereas I'm like, kind of like, you know, like I actually can't get off during sex a lot, so I kind of need to masturbate afterwards anyway. So I was like, yes, we can both do this, you know, so this is fine. Like, this actually takes the pressure off me, you know. And now he's, that rarely happens because it's not like as much as a fear, but like it's just knowing it's not you, it's not, it's just like whatever. Also, it's like, can be something as basic as the temperature in the room, or, and I know for my boyfriend, he has like weight issues and like body image issues. And I said something to him that would never be an issue for me if someone said it to me. But when he said it to me, he was like, oh, that just like makes me feel a little insecure. I was like, oh my God, I'm so sorry. And he wasn't like mean about it. And he wasn't like, he didn't hold it against me. But it was great he communicated that, because instead of like being like, fuck Katie, she's an asshole, he was like, oh, she obviously didn't mean it like this. And I'll just like let her know for the future. And it was like really nice, because sometimes people can be like, how dare you say that? And you're like, well, I did not. That's not even the way I intended that. And so it can be nice to just like be like, I'm insecure about this. It's just make it easy, you know?
Mm-hmm. I love that. Yeah, more points, definitely.
Yeah, he's the best boyfriend in the whole world. I'm so like, I'm never letting him go. If we break up, it'll be because he breaks up with me.
I love that. Just got to get that PSA to the podcast. I'm keeping him. Nobody look him up. He's not a funny comedian at all. Don't even bother going near him.
I mean, you can, but he won't even believe that you fancy him. Like, I mean, he could have like a conversation. There was some like girl messaging him, and he genuinely thought it was like her being like, I love your comedy. And then it got weird and he was like, oh no. And I was like, you're so sweet that he doesn't even realize these things. But he makes me tea every morning, every single morning, 10 months. Every time I stay over, he stays over here. He gets up and makes me tea in the morning. Like, that's romance to me.
Yeah, it's a simple thing. Making tea every day, definitely bridging the gap. Definitely a good way to keep an Irish woman.
He's the first guy who's really like gotten excited about my culture, but not in a... So I had said to you off air, Americans tend to fetishize a little bit And then I've dated a few Irish guys over here who are like, oh yeah, an Irish woman. But then I'm not what they remembered from back home. And it's just like a reason why I'm here. Cause I'm like, I like the being different in New York and stuff. There was an Irish American. He would text me in Irish and I don't speak Irish. So I'd like have to Google that. It was so awkward. And he had like tattoos of the map of Ireland on his back. And oh, he was always talking about Irish like sayings that I didn't like. In the wind, in the where, like stuff that we don't say. And eventually he broke it off with me because he said, like, you're too much woman for me. And like, it was basically he was looking for like a kind of wife in the kitchen, Catholic Irish girl, not like a independent. Yeah, I kind of broke his delusions of his little Irish fetish. Very strange man. Yeah, what was I going to say about my boyfriend now? Something. Oh, yeah. He like, we went to like Irish music night the other night and he's like, he's been to Ireland with me already. So it's nice to have someone who's like really interested in it. And like he gets Barry's tea for his house, even though I prefer Lions, but whatever. And yeah, so it's nice to have someone like really pay attention to those little things.
Yeah, I think that's a good point to wrap up on actually and move on to our rules of the game.
Great.
And I think we may even come back to talking more sex. I'm also interested in, from your comedy, I get the impression that people say the wildest things to you in many instances, including a lot of lies during dating. So we'll come back to that in the bit behind the paywall. But for now, do you have a rule of the game, something you'd recommend trying to live by in dating or relationships?
I don't know, because I always waited till the third date to have sex, but I ended up dating those guys for 3 months and not in a relationship. So I thought that was like a good rule. Honestly, might have been better just to have sex with them on the first night and then never see them again. So I don't know. I think like just really, figure it out what you want. So if you just want casual, you know, just have sex, but don't invest time. Keep your time for your friends and your work and your whatever social life or your workouts, whatever you need. Don't give someone unnecessary time. So if you're like really established with yourself what you want, but if you're looking to like meet somebody, I would say like get to know them first and take your time. And I would probably only have like be keeping sex more for like fun and casual, or if I'm trying to be in a relationship, I kind of like to, I think for me anyway, because sex really confuses me and then I think I like them and I don't. I just like having sex with them. So then I'm dating them and they're actually so boring that I'm having more sex with them just not to have to talk to them. But I do think just to start, like I just didn't, I honestly wasn't being honest with myself at the time. And I think I would have just liked to have had casual. So I think I would have been, if I had had no shame and just like let myself do that. So, and then if you do want a relationship, write down the qualities you want in a person, because that really helps. Because then I think those qualities become attractive, because I was very physical before and going for like what I'm physically like, the look, or they looked cool and they had, you know, like, I think the word is like swagger or whatever, or they had like liked good music, or they're like charming. And then once I started like looking for like long-term, what those qualities became attractive. So like my boyfriend dressed real bad, and usually I wouldn't like someone who dressed like that. He doesn't, honestly, I don't know what, he was like an explosion of clothes on him. I don't know who, I don't know what was going on. But the thing is, as I was dating him, I was like, you know, you could just like wear clothes that actually fit you. This is like two sizes too big. And he was like, yeah, I haven't a clue. I'd love you to help me. And my best friend was like, she was like, we spent all this time trying to fix guys, trying to fix like cool guys' mental health issues. When she was like, you can just get a great guy and bring him shopping.
Shutting him up.
Yeah. Like, I mean, like he just had terrible shoes and terrible shirts. And then when I suggested like, oh, this will look really good on you, he was like, oh, that's really helpful. Thank you. And then he was like, should I have a beard? Like, would you think the beard is nice or haircut? And I was like, oh, a beard would look good on you. And like, he was like, and now he looks really good. And not that I'm with him for that. I'll still be with him if he like decides to dress like shite and stuff like that. Like I got with him before that. And it's so basic. You're like, when you write down the list, it's like, oh, honesty, good communicator, like just the basic stuff. But just writing it down keeps it like as a refresher in your head. And then sometimes, yeah, we kind of just date like charming, good looking. And you're like, get to know them. And it's kind of like, it can be a bit of a dud, or they're not, yeah, what you're looking for. So.
Yes. For sure. Great rule. Love it. Many were squeezed into one there. And I think I'll add a quick one. No, it's all good. It's great. And I think the one I'll add that's kind of linked to that is that I think we can all do work around rejection. And I've definitely been in situations where I felt really rejected. And then I walk away from the situation and I'm like, I didn't actually like them. And sometimes, you know, this can be generally we're not that great at rejection and there's a lot of vulnerability that comes in dating. But I think also there can be a trap with bad dates where you try and swing them around. And particularly if you're from a sort of creative performer background, then that can be exacerbated where I can almost see myself going into like performer mode and we're going to, you know, it's almost like a podcast interview then. We're going to have a really great, inspiring chat. We're both going to get a lot out of it. And then it almost feels like a rejection of the effort I was making to turn it around, which is not the fuck why we're there in the first place. If you're at that stage, the strategy is probably get through it, get away, never see them again. And rejection is difficult and takes practice to cope with.
Yeah, I think too, sometimes when people get rejected, they become more attracted to the person they're being rejected by because they don't want to be rejected. So like I've had girlfriends not interested in guys, kind of like wishy-washy. Then when the guy pulls back, they're more attracted because they don't like feeling rejected or they want to be the one doing rejection. And then when they get the guy back, they're like, oh, I don't really like him. And I'm like, it's painful. It's like that anxious anxiety, you know, that book and it says like the different type of, so sometimes when someone pulls away, you pull forward, but it's all anxious, like ego based.
Yeah.
It's just like being like, yeah, we're not actually, like if you genuinely think about it, like, oh, we're not compatible and this person just saw it first.
Yeah. Oh, it's a lot. Oh, it's exhausting and good for you finding a good one. So we will wrap up there. If people want to find your work, you have a show in New York, you do comedy all over the place, you have a great Instagram with loads of clips. Where can they find all that?
So at Katie Boyle Comic on everything. I have Instagram, TikTok, and Twitter. And then I have the podcast, The Shift. And I have another podcast that's called Living Cheap. And it's just like how to live cheap in New York City on this like different, it's like on a special app. It's called Callin. But yeah, come, no negative comments. TikTok is like insane. And yesterday I was like, Jesus, well, all the weirdos are out today to give out to me. They take things way too seriously. Like I'll put up a joke and they'll be like, that's not true about America. And I'm like, Jesus Christ, I need to start making jokes about pencils or something. So yeah, come and defend my honor.
I love, what a call to action. All right, we'll wrap up there. Thank you so much.
Thanks for listening.
You can support the show, get ad-free episodes and bonus content by joining our new subscription on Apple Podcasts.
This replaces our Patreon and it's slightly cheaper.
Our show is edited and produced by Pete Murta.
With music by the brilliant Tessa Violet.
Speak to you next Friday. Until then, good luck out there.
If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.